Gentlemen, we have a copy of the agenda, Dave. I know there's a deletion.
Yes, I do have several suggested changes. First, item number 3 under myself, proposed lease agreement. We'd like to defer on that item. And then under public hearings, we'd like to change the order so that change of zone number 1651 would be the first public hearing.
Any questions, gentlemen? Being none, motion?
Make a motion we approve the amended agenda.
Second. It's been moved to second that we approve the agenda as amended. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes. Motion passed. You have the minutes from the 4th of 20, second, the 4th month, 22nd. Any corrections? Okay, do I say yes? No.
No.
No?
Make a motion we approve.
Okay. Second, please.
Second.
It's been moved to second that we approve the minutes as printed. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes, motion passed. Jim, correspondence?
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Looks like I've got.
That's for the meeting.
I don't have any correspondence.
That's a good thing.
Inside the library.
I don't know if it is. Okay. Oak Orchard?
Yes.
Dave, I'll let you take it from here.
Okay. I think we have representatives tonight from Oak Orchard American Legion, Post 28 Auxiliary.
Yes.
And
is
it Miss Phillips? Or?
Yes.
Yeah.
Cindy Phillips. This is my daughter, Ashley Phillips. She's the poppy chair this year.
Good evening.
Poppy chair.
Thank you very much for allowing us to come tonight and present you with poppies. I just want to share a little bit about the poppy. You'd be hard-pressed to find a World War I veteran at all, but you would have been hard-pressed to find one that didn't know the significance of this little flower. Unfortunately, the significance is lost over time, and that's why it's our job to continually try and educate everyone. And it's not really important to me that you remember all the little stories that you might hear over time, the Flanders Fields poem written by Colonel John McCrae, or that you remember the story about Mona Michael. She's the one that's largely responsible for this flower being a flower of remembrance. She was the one that first handed it out, and she took it to the American Legion and asked them to wear the poppies as a tribute to their fallen comrades. It's not really important that you know in 1921 the American Legion started to hand out the poppies, or that in 1925 they adopted it at their national convention. It's not even necessary that you always remember, but each one of these little poppies is handmade by a veteran in a veteran's hospital. What is important and what really matters is that you know that when you wear this flower, you're honoring the many who have paid the ultimate price for our freedoms, and you're letting all your service people know and everyone who sees you wearing this flower that you honor our veterans and that you will always remember. So we'd like to present each one of you with one.
Thank you.
That's pretty cool.
Already bloomed.
Yeah, we didn't get enough sunlight.
Thank you.
Didn't open up yet, right?
Library get water yesterday.
Thank you, man.
Library get water in yesterday.
And give me, I'll put one here for Mr. Phillips here. I'll tell you. There we go. In case
I put it behind me here.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Look like you're from Hawaii.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thanks for coming up and giving us a little bit of history, also. Thank you. Mr. Baker?
Yes. The first item is a proclamation regarding Community Action Month, and with us today we have Ms. Bernice Edwards, and Bernice would like to come up, and while she's coming up, I'll read the proclamation. Proclaiming the month of May as Community Action Month, whereas community action agencies were created when the Economic Opportunity Act of 1964 was signed into law, and whereas community action agencies have more than a 40-year history of promoting self-sufficiency for the limited income, and whereas community action agencies have made an essential contribution to individuals and families in Sussex County by providing them with innovative and cost-effective programs, whereas community action agencies are needed as major participants in the reform of the welfare system as we know it, whereas the limited income continue to need opportunities to improve their lives and their living conditions, thus ensuring that all citizens are able to live in dignity, and whereas Delaware and the entire United States must continue to wage war on poverty by providing support and opportunities for all citizens in need of assistance. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Sussex County Council hereby proclaims the month of May as Community Action Month in Sussex County, a recognition of First State Community Action Agency's hard work and dedications to the residents of Sussex County.
Gentlemen, I need a motion, please.
So moved. Second.
It's been moved and seconded. We accept the proclamation as read. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Duke?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes, motion passed. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you for having us tonight. But with me tonight, I have two of my board members. Community Action is governed by a tripartite board, which is one-third of our members are from the public sector, and Mr. Bill LaCates, who represent the county government, and a third of our members from the private sector, and Ms. Gail Lene from Lene Consulting in Rehoboth. And the other third is the consumer, and it's mandated by law that those individuals who serve from the consumer sector, from the low-income community, have to live in the communities that we serve. Okay. So tonight I have two of my board members with me.
Perfect. Lynn, do you want to give the proclamation?
Yeah.
Sure.
On behalf of the Sussex County Council and all the citizens of Sussex County, we it's an honor to present you a proclamation.
Thank you.
The next item is a presentation from Safe Haven Sanctuary, and with us tonight, I think we have Ms. Lois Fargo, and also I know Mr. Meredith is here in support, but I think Ms. Fargo is going to
She's the main squeeze, huh?
Yeah.
Good evening. I'm Lois Fargo, one of the founders of Safe Haven Animal Sanctuary. And in the year 2003, I read an article in the News Journal that stated that between 18 and 20,000 animals were put down in the state shelters that year, and more proportionately in Sussex County. And my friend and I decided at that time that we needed to have a no-kill sanctuary for Sussex County, and we proceeded to make plans for that. We wanted a sanctuary that will provide a safe and loving environment for homeless and abandoned or abused animals, particularly cats and dogs. And we wanted to have a strong, very strong adoption program, and a big thing for us is educating the public. We had a vision of the kind of sanctuary that we wanted. We wanted to have rooms for the animals rather than cages. We wanted to have screened-in porches for the cats. And we decided that we wanted to buddy the dogs up, in other words, put two dogs together in a room because they're more comfortable that way. And we decided that we would play New Age classical and harp music during the day to calm the animals. And we wanted an attractive facility. We wanted it to be filled with light and to be airy and a pleasant place for people to come and work and for the animals to be. And that's exactly what we're going to have. And very shortly, we're going to start building on Shingle Point Road near Georgetown. We have a lovely 14-acre secluded piece of land. And we're getting ready to build a 19,000-square-foot green facility at that point. And we are modeling our facility on Best Friends, which it was the first no-kill facility in the United States and is the largest. And some of our board members have visited Best Friends in Utah, and we visited other facilities in Virginia and New York, trying to take the best of the best. And I would like to now introduce Ann Grishin, who is Safe Haven's Executive Director.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I want to thank the council very much for having us this evening, and Mr. Baker as well for all of his help, and also the mayors and council people who are here from the various towns in Sussex County. In fact, I also want to thank former Mayor Meredith of Ocean View and his wife, and who's actually one of our volunteers as well, so very grateful for that. And as Lois mentioned, part of our goal is increasing kennel space and room space for the animals that are there. So part of our mission is to have about 2,000 animals housed at some time during the year at the shelter, housing anywhere between 300 and 400 animals at any given moment. And again, have about 2,000 go through the system every single year, but also serve more animals and more people as well. But I'll talk about that in a moment. One of the things, again, we will be a no-kill facility. So one of our goals is that we don't really consider any, unless literally there is no hope for an animal, that no animal is an adoptable. So one of our goals is to also have housing that's available. When we talk about rooms, it's not just because that's kind of a nice thing to do, but there's a reason behind it. It's because we do want the animals to be healthy and happy and to be adoptable, even if they have to stay with us for a little bit longer. So we do have some good intentions behind that. And what's really important as well is the supporters that we've had. And we've had wonderful support from the community. Even though we don't have a shelter that's running at the moment, we actually have over 1,000 contributing supporters. We also have over 500 volunteers. And one of the things that people tell us all the time is they want to volunteer for us is because they want to come into the situation, into the facility, and know that if they walk a dog one day, if they pet a cat one day, that they won't come back the next day and that animal will no longer be there, and it's not because it was adopted. So there's a very strong support for a no-kill shelter in the area, and it's important to a lot of people. So again, our goal, again, is not only to help animals, but it's also to help the people who care about them, even though we will have, again, expanded facilities for the animals to be housed. Our goal is also helping the community as a whole, having spay-neuter programming that's available for the animals of low-income individuals, for those caring citizens who care about colonies of feral cats, and there are quite a few out there who really want that assistance and need it, helping low-income individuals who also may need help feeding their animals. Again, we are not in the best economic times at the moment, and a lot of people are in situations where they're not able to help their animals as they need to, and part of our goal is to be there for those individuals and be able to help them. Because on the one hand, the shelter is very important, and we're again thrilled to have David Quillen as our architect, and we'll talk a little bit more about the facility in a few moments. But what's important as well is keeping the animals out of the shelter, and that's really the goal in the end. It's having those spay-neuter programs available, having the food services available for elderly people, for low-income residents as well, for their animals, so they're able to keep them in their homes rather than them ending up at the shelter. And again, with that, we'll be helping thousands of people and hundreds, we hope, in terms of the animals that we can help save, keeping out of the system. One of our goals as well is to make Sussex County a no-kill county for animals, a safe haven, a true safe haven for animals in the area. And then in the end, we've started partnering with other shelters in the state, especially with Faithful Friends in Wilmington, and our end goal is really to make Delaware a safe, no-kill state for cats and dogs, and to make people feel comfortable and confident that the animals are very well treated. And actually, if we do end up meeting that goal, we would be the first true no-kill state in the nation. And even though the statistics that Lois said were very tragic, very, you know, unhappy, very unnecessary, they're also very reversible. We're not dealing with hundreds of thousands of animals. We're dealing with about 13, 14, 15,000 at the moment. So it's a very reversible trend, and that's what we're going to be looking forward to working towards. One of our goals, as well as Lois mentioned, is education, and not only in education how to treat animals better, but also in terms of the environment. The board was interested in various goals in terms of helping the environment, making us an environmentally sound facility, and we've grown that to actually make our building what we hope to be an educational experience for people with environmental education as well. And when we're built, we'll actually be the first LEED certified. I'm going to have David talk about that a little bit more, but actually the first LEED certified building in all of Sussex County and one of the few in Delaware. So part of our goal is helping animals, but also sustaining the environment as well. And I'll be here. I can answer some questions for you now or maybe a little later after David presents, but I'll also be staying afterwards. If you have any other questions, I'll stay through the end of the meeting. But I would like to also invite you all. We're going to be having a groundbreaking ceremony on July the 29th. It'll be sometime in the afternoon. I'll talk to Mr. Baker as soon as we know the exact time, but it will be Thursday, May 29th. I said July, I apologize. May 29th. at our location, which is just about 3 miles down the road, not very far from here. So I'd like to invite all of you to that if you can make it, and we'll have a more formal invitation to all of you as soon as that's available.
While you're up here, are you going, will this do away with the SPCA?
Not necessarily, but
it,
okay. Well, if we can help if that's what you wish. But our goal is, again, it's not only to shelter more animals, that is part of the goal, but to make it such that there's so few animals coming to the system. When I was working out in the Midwest, one thing I was volunteering with was actually transporting dogs from Kentucky and Indiana up to New Hampshire and Maine, because those states did such a wonderful job with spaying and neutering their animals. They actually had empty kennels. They had no dogs to adopt out. So part of our hope is in the future even to do not just eliminating potentially other agencies if that's what needs to happen, but actually helping other states. And once our endowment grows, and again, our first priority is for Sussex County and to take care of Sussex County first, but once we've done well here, once we're able to help the state of Delaware, is potentially helping other states and really be a model for other states, helping them with programming, helping them with kennel space. So the goal would be a few years down the line, people will be calling because we don't have any animals to adopt here. We'll have to import them from other states. So to answer your question in the long run, our goal is to be a full service facility. And I think one of the criticisms that often comes around with no-kill shelters is that you pick and choose. You only take the cuddly and cute easily to adopt, and that's by no means our philosophy at all. In fact, again, as Lois had mentioned,
what do you do with the ugly dogs?
Well, the ugly dogs, two things. One, sometimes you have to rehabilitate them a little bit, and then you try to make them look pretty. And a lot of it is marketing. A lot of the work that you do is actually competing with the pet shops and making things attractive. Well, again, just as the volunteers will often say, we'll try to pretty them up. But one thing that just as the volunteers say, they don't want to come into a facility because they're upset because, again, a dog may be put down the next day after they've walked it. It's very often the same with the public. And one of the reasons that shelter adoptions aren't that high is very often the facilities aren't that attractive. People don't want to come in. They're depressed when they come in. They don't want to leave the others behind. So our goal is to also make it, again, not in any frivolous manner, but make it a very appealing, pleasant, but also, again, cost-effective facility so that when people come, they won't have a bad experience. They'll know that this is a good place to go to, and if they're looking for an animal, to come and adopt there. So a lot of it is marketing as well.
Do you do anything with horses?
Well, we've talked about that, and in the future we will. Our first is that's a horse person, excellent. What we want to do first is the first few years to concentrate and take care of the dogs and cats, make sure that that's working very well. One of the unique situations we have on our 14 acres is we're surrounded by hundreds of other acres. So again, as our endowment grows and once things are running smoothly in the county and the state for cats and dogs, our goal is to help other animals, especially horses, and we know that there's a huge need for that right now. Okay. So that is the goal for the future. So.
Is there another safe haven?
What happens with a lot of shelters is they often have, there's a safe haven in California, there's a safe haven in New Mexico, there's a volunteer group actually in Maine, but there is no other, our full name is actually Safe Haven Animal Sanctuary of Sussex County. So again, our primary goal is Sussex County, and until Sussex County is doing right and well by its cats and dogs, that will be our emphasis.
I know there seems to be several groups, though, to do the same thing, same deal.
There are groups, but our goal is also to do this on a large scale. So 2,000 animals a year in terms of the ones that we actually house within the facility, but again, also helping hundreds, if not thousands, of others with other services as well. So, what I'll do now, again, I'll stay through the end of the meeting, so if you all have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them in greater detail. But I would like to introduce our architect. We're very happy to have him. David Quillen is one of the few LEED certified architects in the area, in our region. I think, David, you may be the only one on the whole Delmarva Peninsula, if I'm not mistaken. And we're very grateful to have David. He's really designed a building for us that's not only environmentally sound, but very cost-effective and is very animal-centered. So it utilizes the space best for the animals. There's no unwasted space in the building. And our goal is to build green so we can also use the money that we save by our energy costs in helping more animals. So with that, I'd like to introduce David. And again, we're very happy to have him on board. And thank you again for your time.
Thank you, ma'am.
Can everybody see if I present with the board where it is? this is a good location.
Why don't you come in and introduce yourself first here, and then that'd be cool. I think that would work.
My name is David Quillen. I'm the architect for the Safe Haven Animal Sanctuary, okay. And I feel very fortunate to be working on this project. And I'll try and run you through the plans and some renderings so you can get a sense of what the building will be like real quickly, and then just respond to any questions that you might have. These are some aerial views to give you a sense of how it sits. As Lois mentioned, it's a large 14-acre lot. It's set way back. This is Shingle Point Road here. There's a very long flag driveway. And then you get to this opening. It was logged a few years ago. So currently, it's pretty much a big open clearing in the middle of the woods. Now, we have plans to reforest parts of this and maintain some of it as a meadow that I'll get into in a minute. But our building's going in this big opening. If you can see this, it's the building is organized around a courtyard. There's two entry points at either end, and then we have our dog kennels, the dog wings on one side and the cats are on the other. Let me show you on site plan. We have a driveway. We'll come in. There's two entrances to the building. We call one the people entrance and one the animal entrance. So if you're coming to adopt an animal, you'll come in, park at the front, and come in at this side. And then you'll go, if you're interested in a dog, you'll go one way and a cat the other way. Now, if you're bringing an animal or an animal has been recovered and is being brought in, it comes in the back. This building is our medical wing. And so the animals come in, they're treated there, they go out into quarantine, and gradually they sort of move forward as they become healthier and more adoptable, move forward. So we have these sort of two intertwined loops of the people going one way, animals going the other until they match up. This is a little bit larger plan, and this shows the main entrance comes in here, and we have reception and then administrative function. As you go down here, these are called interaction rooms where we can put the ugly dogs trying to move. Try and highlight them.
I thought it was building three is where you got to put the ugly dogs. moved them up as they got better.
Let me get back. One of the organizing principles of the building is this courtyard, and it's got a number of advantages for us. One is it naturally tempers the climate. It's going to be warmer in the winter due to the fact that it's protected, and it's going to be cooler in the summer to our deciduous trees. So we can really open the building up. This is 100% glazing all around this courtyard. So it really opens the building up all the time. So much of the year we'll be able to have natural ventilation. We don't have to use mechanical equipment. It also allows us to make these wings narrower so that we get lots of natural daylight coming through here. We also get lots of ventilation. And it helps to keep the dogs and cats as separate, too, which is probably a good thing. Now, as you move through, these are the rows of our dog rooms. And as they mentioned, we're going to have two dogs per room. There's no cages in the facility. Each animal has its own room, and it also has its own outside porch. So it's always free to go outside if it wants. And the theory being that if we keep the animals really comfortable and really healthy, they're going to be a lot more adoptable. They're going to behave a lot better and be much easier to adopt out. So there's these three rows of the dog rooms, and then there's quarantine at the end. In between is where we have all our support spaces, food, spaces for the volunteers and all. Same basic arrangement on the cat side, but the cats are in rooms. There's going to be 10 to 12 cats in a room. But same basic arrangement, quarantine back here. This is our vet facility. Now on the second floor, the administrative building is a two-story building, and the medical building is a two-story building. This green up here is a vegetated roof. So all of this is going to be planted. There is a walkway around the top of it, so the public and volunteers with dogs can take the dogs up, and you can do a lap around the roof if you want, looking down into the courtyard. These are the roofs of the animal enclosures, which rise up, and I'll show you how those work in just a moment. Here's some images showing what it's going to be like as you approach the building, coming into the entry, coming into the courtyard. And I should mention also, the courtyard really is our biggest interaction room. If you find a dog you like, you can take it out, you can throw a ball, you can run around with it. You're not confined to interacting with it in a cage where you really don't know its personality. So hopefully this is going to be filled with animals and people getting to know each other. Another view of the courtyard from the other end. This is an aerial view, and this shows our vegetated roof running all around that space and our plants up here. Now, I'll talk a little bit about these roofs over the animal enclosures. They're an inverted roof shape, or some people call it a butterfly roof. We're going to collect all of the rainwater that falls on these roofs, collect them in cisterns that are at the end of each wing, and we're going to use that water for pressure washing the animal cages. There's a lot of cleaning that goes on. Normally, a facility like this would take up a whole lot of water, but we're going to collect an awful lot of it on site and not have to pull that out of the ground. Also, the other reason for these is we're using passive solar strategies in the winter. We want the sun to heat the building as much as possible. All of these overhangs, if you can see, the building is oriented with each of the long wings facing due south. Each one has this big overhang to the south. In the summer, the sun's very high, and these windows won't get any direct sunlight at all. So there's very little heat gain in the summer. In the winter, the sun is much lower, and these angles have all been calculated so that we get full heat gain all through the winter. So we'll have to add very little supplementary heating. What supplementary heat we do get, we're going to have solar thermal panels on the roof. The sun will be heating that water. We're going to run that through radiant floors. We also have PV panels on all of the spaces that haven't been taken for solar thermal, generating much of our electricity. Here's some renderings of what it might be like inside. We're using very simple materials. You know, we're trying to be very cost effective, but we're trying to make a very rich space. We're going to open up this courtyard wall whenever possible, and so you know, we don't have hallways and little rooms. Everything's as wide open as possible. Each of the animal enclosures is fronted. It's all glass. You know, there's no steel bars or cages, so you know, it's really is like their own room. Concrete flooring. We're using most of the walls in the roof panel are a product called Agriboard, which is it's a structural insulated panel made of recycled wheat, 100% recycled material, super tight, so our building envelope is going to be very efficient mechanically. But all very simple sort of rustic materials throughout, but put together in a way that we think will be a pretty exciting place to be spatially. This is a quick diagram illustrating the roofs I was talking about. This shows at 10 and at noon and at 2 in the afternoon in the winter, and you can see this is a typical facade. All of these windows have full daylight every day during winter. Same thing at 10 noon and at 2 in the summer, and they're all in full shade. I guess I'll leave it at that and see if you have any questions I can answer.
Any questions, gentlemen?
Sounds like a spa.
Yeah.
Can I go?
What's your capital expenditure for your fundraiser company?
We're using geothermal
too. Sure.
Well, we're actually in the process of getting bids as we speak. We're using corporate contractors as our general contractor, and we're starting to get some bids in. So we're not quite sure yet. As soon as we know, we'll have that information for you. But again, our goal, the money, if we do, with the money that we do spend, we're trying to be as cost effective as possible, and we're hoping to recoup a lot of that with energy efficient systems that we're using. Because a lot of our goal, again, is to use the least amount of energy as possible. We're hoping to, if things work well, we're hoping to achieve actually gold LEED status. And what that does as well is also opens us up to funding from foundations that otherwise wouldn't be available to us. So our goal is using a lot of foundation funding and grants as well. Our road is actually in, and in fact, if anyone, I've left everyone with my business card and some information about the building and the facility. We'd be happy to take you on a tour of the facility, or it's not the facility yet, but a tour of the property, even before the groundbreaking, if that's a time that would work better for any of you all. I've also left some information on the back table as well. So our road is actually in. We've actually cleared the site, and we're ready to pour concrete very, very soon. So, again, with our groundbreaking on the 29th,
we're moving ahead. I understand it was a little bit of a slow process in the beginning, but part of our situation, actually not part, but a large part of the situation was the fact that we waited over a year for our federal permit, for our wetlands permit from the Army Corps of Engineers, then we were waiting for over 6 months for our DLDOT permit, and then over 9 months for our soil conservation permits. I think all of you are aware of situations like that. And so we did have a little bit of a holdup because of our permit wait, but we're moving ahead.
Okay. Right. Fantastic.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Any other questions? Thank you, Dave.
Thank you all.
The next item is the county administrator's report, and the first item is Northeaster Storm, May 12th. Moderate tidal flooding occurred in Sussex County in the Inland Bays and Delaware Beaches on May 12th and this morning. A number of road closures resulted from the flooding and the storm. Power outages, fallen trees, and flooding created some property damage. Various road closures occurred, especially in the areas near Slaughter Beach, Prime Hook, Oak Orchard, Route 1, and Route 1 at the Indian River Inlet Bridge. We did attach our copies of press releases from the storm. The storm was somewhat unexpected, but we do want to wish the or to thank their fire service volunteers as well as the National Guard, state and county employees who worked during the storm to minimize its effects. We were fortunate again in not having more damage than we did, and we were especially concerned about the evening high tide, but that, from yesterday, but that turned out to be less of an impact than the morning high tide. The next item is Sussex County Advisory Committee for the Aging. Attached is a copy of the agenda for the May 19th meeting of the Sussex County Advisory Committee for Aging and Adults with Physical Disabilities. The meeting will be held at the West Complex on North DuPont Highway in Georgetown at 10 a.m. And then last, proposed fiscal 2009 budget. Sussex County will unveil the proposed fiscal 2009 budget on this coming Tuesday, May 20th, beginning at 10 a.m. at the council chambers right here. The public is invited to attend. Comments will be accepted at a later public hearing scheduled for 10:15 on June 17th. A special media briefing and presentation of the budget will be held at 8 a.m. on May 20th in the council chambers. Media representatives are encouraged to attend this briefing in order to ask questions and review details. Copies of the proposed budget will also be available on the county's website next Tuesday. Thank you.
Any questions, Mr. Baker? Being none, Susie?
Thank you. Tonight I would like to introduce Steve Fallon. He is from the firm, he is from Insurance Buyers Council, our insurance consultants, and is our group hospital consultant. Tonight, he'd like to give a review of his findings and recommendations regarding our group hospital plan. He'll give his findings and recommendations, and I'll say a few words. Thank you, Steve.
Good evening. Thanks for your time. I just want to provide you with a brief summary and then respond to any questions you have regarding